I'm Molly, and you're listening to KBOO Portland.
We know a KBOO community membership is at the top of everyone's wish list this season. Give the gift of supporting grassroots community media by making a donation during KBOO's Catalog of Connections campaign now through December 31st. Our $75,000 goal will go towards everyone's favorite music, news, and public affairs programming all year long. Just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Thank you and happy holidays.
Hey everybody, tune in Saturday, December 21st at 5 o'clock for Blues Junction. We're spreading some holiday cheer with singer-songwriter Mark Lemhaus. He's a blues man, and he's got some new music coming out here. I've invited him to come out and do a live performance and interview, and who knows, maybe he'll squeeze in a holiday tune. So again, that's Mark Lemhaus, Saturday, December 21st. You're invited. Winter's now fading,
and I won't have to stay here too. KBOO Portland. It was the woman with the shopping cart I saw her when I was driving over the railroad tracks down in the Industrial River area. It was an early December evening, cold and wet and dark, and the wind was blowing hard. It was the kind of cold rain that blows sideways right through you and makes you want to get away from it right now, immediately, to stop it with anything you can, a car door or a quickly arriving bus or $100. The woman was just standing in it under the lamppost light. She didn't have an umbrella in the cart. She was staring up at the light, shaking her fist and yelling angrily. She was mad at it. The only relationship she had turned bad on her. I drove on and left her there because it seemed there was nothing I could do for her. Or rather, I didn't know when to begin, what to do, or how to do it. You see, in the first place, I didn't have a degree, which is a kind of mutant gene of our culture, but without which you are hardly fit for survival. I knew the woman under the lamppost light didn't have a degree. If she had, she would have worked out her relationship with the lamppost. She could have known about conflict resolution and codependency insights. I thought about how the homeless advocate Mitch Snyder had spent his life trying to help them, and all we did was make a crummy TV movie about him. He didn't get anywhere close to what Martin Luther King did for his people, and he was killed for his efforts. And then I thought how even the whole Soviet Union had tried to save the woman under the lamppost light and failed. So what could I do? Where could I begin, an unemployed middle-aged man without a degree? Anyway, it was then I realized all I could do was shoot the mayor, which I really didn't want to do, what with the season and all. It wasn't as bad as it sounds. I didn't want to kill the mayor, just a flesh wound, a modest act, really. You see, it's mainly that it ruins my evenings when I have to pass the people with the shopping carts on my way home to my warmth and shelter and privacy. It tarnishes the joy I get from my toilet and bathtub and bed, and I just want somebody who is supposed to be responsible, to care, someone who represents us all, the human people who live here in our city. If I was a mayor and had a degree, I would be worried sick about people who had been that far away from good fortune. But the mayor, like me, drives past them to a warm home and is seen smiling and happy in the newspapers and on TV. Only the thing, the mayor is not like me. The mayor has a degree and ought to be doing something about this immediately, right away. So that is why someone should shoot the mayor. Only I can't, because I've had a history of depression and had to go see someone with a degree. And you know what the media would do with that. They would take this civic-minded act and trash it. They would say I was deranged and unstable. The whole thing would be diminished or ignored. So it would be better if a city council member did it. Someone new and popular and clean, one of those Frank Capra, It's a Wonderful Life kind of people. Or even better, a governor or senator should shoot the mayor, someone with a clean record and a degree. If I were a governor or a senator and had a degree and drove past people who were cold and wet and had unhappy relationships with lamppost lights, I would shoot the mayor. That piece is entitled Why I Want to Shoot the Mayor by Dennis McBride, Portland poet, critic, and mentor, a visionary who died last month. Dennis had posted copies of that text on telephone poles in his neighborhood, and he got a visit from the police. I'm Dan Raphael, here on KBO Portland, where we're doing our end-of-the-year fund drive. KBOO is nonprofit, non-commercial, community-driven, grassroots radio, and needs some drive, a.k.a. cash, from you community people out there. So go to KBOO-FM, and you'll know what to do. My three featured poets tonight, all still alive and well, are Laura Feldman, Jason Kastrup, and Jennifer Coleman. So let's start with Laura. Laura Feldman was born and raised in North Portland. She serves on the Willamette River Advisory Board and the Oregon Hanford Cleanup Board. Her work includes the chapbook Hearing Hanford from Nine Muses Press, and more recently her memory essay Trip to Richland, which appeared in Beyond the Margin, an Oregon Humanities Online magazine. And here's Laura Feldman.
Antipsoriatic healing. Tibetan monks had almost completed the intricate sand mandala over a painstaking 2-week process, which everyone loved watching, when a crazed person charged the mandala, saying it was a work of Satan. She destroyed it. Museum officials were outraged and wanted to punish her, but the monks refused to press charges. In fact, they prayed for the woman while explaining to everyone that the mandala was meant to be erased, and they started their work all over again from scratch. 2 weeks later, when it was done, they ritually removed it themselves before pouring the sand into the Pacific Ocean. The Tokyo Electric Power Company completed the dumping of the 10th batch of approximately 7,800 metric tons of treated but still radioactive wastewater from the damaged Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant. From October 17th through November 4th of this year, 2.4 trillion becquerels of radioactive tritium was released into the Pacific Ocean. The morning psalm reigns in its purpose, inviting Netanyahu and news from Doughton Abbey, Noam Chomsky uninvited, but the morning has already still. You can't really enjoy your meal or your outfit knowing by not enjoying your privilege of sleeping unmolested by war or hunger, you and I send it forward, bending down, touching the mitigated earth up the love bomb. If young people had not taken to the streets, transitioning from protest politics to long-term change. I'm asleep as I write this, fortune-bearing in a land of equivalences, syllabus. How do we think about what doesn't stop being catastrophic? I had not yet entered history, high on grilled cheese. I'm going to put bells on my symbolic flesh that connects to the model of the river which my symbolic flesh depends. Happy Fukushima Day. Where were you when that's happening? Mox Bottom, Diesel Portal, my childhood swamp. The last time I sat here on Mox Crest, renamed Wad's Bluff for the guy who used to hang out at the Portway Tavern, soon to be condos, regaling anyone who would listen to Civil War stories. There were no engines, no fumes, no exhaust, just the meandering plague. With white male history markers pointing the way to slavery and colonization. York was still behind me watching Clark designate Siksikwa as Mount Jefferson. University of Portland Athletic Field next to Swan Island, a Superfund hotspot, dreams its dream of a clean river, only a boulder from the Missoula floods, with a relief of Lewis and Clark's faces, remaining to tell us about Mox Crest. I feel a curse is in order. Let's pretend I get married on this section of the bluff where the contaminants make me swoon, looking out on the unstable, volatile fuel storage tanks across the river. You be one of my genetically modified children who predeceases me, and you can be one of the healthy young Americans who will rule the world one day. Mazel tov. Students come here to lounge are not practicing safe distancing or mask wearing because they are, for all they know, invincible. Blame forward. Blame it all. The grass stones have been covered. The road seeps over you. Let it. Your story has not been diagnosed yet. Another viaticum, provisions for a journey. This was written in collaboration with, in the beginning, Creation Stories from Around the World by Virginia Hamilton. Also, After Fukushima, The Equivalence of Catastrophes by Jean-Luc Nancy. Another viaticum. In ancient Rome, a viaticum consisted of money or supplies provided as traveling expenses for an officer on an official mission, monies or supplies for any journey, or the Eucharist given to a person or river in danger of death. In the beginning, long, long ago, there was only the ocean. The animals decided the woman needed to live on earth. In a boat called Millions of Years, disappearing into the underworld of the underneath sky, the greatest of the middle realm men. Light came from them, shining on everything. "It is well," Chameleon said. "The earth is wide, and it is dry this time." And when they married, it was feared they would come together and crush what lay between them, the woman who fell from the sky. Having one God means having one time and one world, one capitalism and one Laura, the evil one, the good one. And there was light. It was always a punishment or threat of some kind. It drank up the fresh water that wasn't the earth, all of it. Huge mosquitoes the size of wild turkeys. The freezer door springs open. He is successful in tricking the god and his court into thinking he is a bird. None knew, not even the elephant who knows all. There are not enough bandicoots for a stable food supply for all of the suns created. What is created by a god must be made perfect or it is destroyed. The world is destroyed in a flood of honey. In the beginning, bacterium. The earth opens up. Angry ancestors, the importance of the division title. I am living proof of something. This is not equanimous, debunking Mother Teresa and hers. Un ami à Tokyo me dit qu'elle s'en bouge la terre même que ça ne bouge pas. Namazu, the great angry catfish, stirs. Engaged realism, the rapture. In the beginning was man who created God in his image. He was lonely and afraid of dying, as he was of being connected to others, to the earth, and especially resentful of an earth that could outlive him. You know what happened next. The Garden of Eden. One finds oneself in a watershed within the Christian hegemony, the big red sparkly penis-like question mark on campus. I believe in the Christian devil that I myself have no creation story. I don't know the beginning. I feel a spiritual, spatial connection to the land inside myself on good days. Behind any man, another man. Inside every woman, all children. Offering them up, as it were, to God. I realized I have no memory of my birth of Jesus. I rip the Christian story down from the wall of her contorted, I will listen respectfully to this old cat even if it kills me, face. If it does kill me, I will rise up to heaven, leaving my shoes on the pavement for someone else to walk this veil of tears. Coyote storied the river that is now bordered by a tinderbox of chemicals and gases, and God, sweet God, save us. My life is like a river, flowing where it must flow, not where we want it to go. Never having believed in the floating male godhead, I floated. The Christian fundamentalist preacher deflowing young women in the depths of Lake Victoria. Believing in the goddess of a stylized earth, I wasn't attached to the beginning. Big bang broken promises form the promised land. In the beginning, one returns and is lost in a damaged place that welcomes all. No words can express my regard for you, Laura. Love, Mom. River Potoms. Ignorance may be bliss, but it does not lead to liberation. From Mindfulness in Plain English, Wisdom Publications. This big fat bumblebee, yellow jackets in Mrs. Bardoff's bushes, holes punched in the top for air, another bee from childhood, and now a third bee. What did we do with them? Just to contain something other. The bees unable to sting, Mrs. Bardoff contained. That was the thrill. It burns itself out, those surges. Her orderly world long gone, her industry, her husband, Merle. It wakes itself sometimes and passes, and a butterfly. Someday you'll be the bee, the queen, the jar. It's like that, the tour boat. A fourth bee, very unmindful of me and very close. They didn't see me or the bees, the bridge, the rotting industry. They were contained and could see only what was shown them. He tried to jump, the perceived panic of the bee, to be without moving, trying to change the river, as I just did. The river seeks itself always. In seeking its source, you may plow over it, throw things into it, but it is itself in it, no excuses. The shade is moving that way. Rustle of trestles and piers that once crossed the river. Why not? Someone once said. I was afraid. But when you have nowhere left to turn, right. It paid off, maybe in ways you can't see. In other words, this tree. There should have been volunteer recognition, but they weren't volunteers then. They were just flowers and trees and wildlife doing what needed to be done. Off the bridge, falling into the Golden Gate, diving into a nursing home, swirling in his own icon. This body back to the source, the hard way. You have a moment on the edge. Imperialist, white supremacist, capitalist patriarchy. From Bell Hooks' Belonging, A Culture of Place. Sanctuary. How toxic of you. Is there honey toxic too? Why can't we? Why won't we? Don't think I can stand one more meeting about the river without being the river. Oily tarballs coming ashore. EPA Summit. Ground rules. Update on community involvement planned. Square round table. I didn't want to begin a group of three where I'd be the audience for two. Grading facilitator's voice. The sound benzoapyrene makes when updated. 7 times less toxic than previous conservative levels. So we can leave it in the ground. Absorbed into the body by inhalation through skin and ingestion of the body of Christ. Carcinogenic, genetic damage, heart disease, diabetes, neurotoxicity behaviors such as impaired cognition, ataxia, incontinence. Bioaccumulates in fish, plants, mollusks, and politicians. Who owns stock in the corpse? Tech level of expertise we'll need to review. Enter the narrative, small mouth bass, overseas sampling. Dance off against Dr. Carpenter on exposure through volatilizing PCBs. EPA's Table 17, no exceedances. Neither selenium nor PCBs will cross this imaginary line. Lack of a mile for different cleanup criteria. State looking at creating website of real time. Oshun, Yoruba goddess and Orisha, associated with love, fertility, beauty, and fresh water. My mother's house is the river. My mother's house is the river. My mother of the children of fishes is the owner of rivers, all-powerful. Women who flee for safety habitually visit her. My mother, house of tradition. My mother, house of tradition. All-powerful, my deeds of charity habitually consult you. My mother, house of tradition. Mother, you burned bright today. You sprout abundantly, yes. Power, enter the house. Swell goodness. We swim in a circle always to arrive home. Where is goodness? Where is goodness? Make way on the road of water. We look for it. We swim. We seek her. We swim to Yemoja. We see her and swim.
Thanks, Lara. Next up is Jason Kastrup. Jason says you may have heard him on a street corner or a Revolution Hall, but probably haven't read him. A poetry slam champion and former on-air radio personality, Jason has toured the West Coast and Midwest with his poems and improv. He's performed at national festivals like Spontaneous Combustion and organized readings like Oral Pleasures. Jason's podcast, These Evolving Times, ran for over 7 years. He's currently at work on a new podcast called How We Get By, about coping through life's turbulences of extreme highs and lows. Here's Jason Kastrup.
Hi, my name is Jason. Thank you so much for listening. This poem is called Tomorrow's Not Working. Please use today. Tomorrow, please wait for your table. Tomorrow's batteries are not included. Tomorrow has a $5 cover. Tomorrow, may I see your license and registration, please? Tomorrow's not working. Please use today. Tomorrow doesn't have change for a dollar. Tomorrow's got the wrong number. Tomorrow is way past last call. Tomorrow has been 86th. Tomorrow is not working. It's not. Please, use today. Tomorrow ain't got no cigarettes. And tomorrow just left with the boat. Tomorrow just quit. Tomorrow sold out. Tomorrow's not working. Please, use today. Tomorrow's check just bounced, and tomorrow just ran out of gas, and tomorrow restrictions do apply. Tomorrow was never and will never ever be insured. Tomorrow is not working. Please, please, please use today. Tomorrow has the clap. Tomorrow just got declined. Tomorrow's gone fishing. Tomorrow has been interrupted to bring you this urgent message. Tomorrow is not working. Please use today. Tomorrow's porridge is always too hot or too cold. Tomorrow keeps falling like a pair of quitter socks. Tomorrow is too soft to do it right now. Tomorrow's obituary hangs on my refrigerator door. Tomorrow, it's not working. Please, use today. Here's another one. I was reading a lot of Rumi at the time, and I wrote this. Dear friends, make no mistake, this is my cry for help. All my friends, they say I'm nuts. They say I'm crazy. But I'm so confident in clearly speaking these days with clarity unbecoming of me ever. And yet the reactions to who I am and how I am and who I'm becoming leave folks bewildered, wondering about my well-being. They're wondering about my well-being. They're wondering about my well-being. They're wondering about my well-being when my well-being just resides in love. I'm like crazy in love. I'm in love with someone who's in this room. I'm in love with someone who's going unseen. I'm in love with someone that many people hear me speak about but rarely ever believe in. You see, I'm talking to you. I'm talking to you about love. But that's just not it. No, I'm talking to you about God. But that's just not it either. No. No, 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 no. No, I'm talking to you about you. And I know you're in there too. because you've been playing hide and seek with your love moment by moment since the first time we met. Each individually, this beautiful beloved one I see of all of you. You all touch me, and you each continuously kiss me. Each individually, this beautiful beloved one I see of all of you. Now, when I say these things, I feel like I should apologize. I feel like I should say I'm sorry, but I could never say I'm sorry. Because every time I feel like I've said too much, every time I know I can never, ever, ever say enough. You see, I know this. I take comfort in this. So write this down. Write this down in your little notebook, okay? That you are never, ever, 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 ever alone. That you are love, and you are loved, and you're like always in this crazy, insane, ecstatic state of loving. I know, I'm crazy. I'm insane. Hell, I even got called a Barney the other day, but you know what? Oh, I am a happy man. I am content, and I'm satisfied, because I am in love with love. And I'm in love with God. And I'm, like, wildly in love with all of you. Let's try one more. Haven't done this one for a while. And this is a crowd tickler. I was working in a bar downtown. And I was a bartender. And there were two couches that were sitting right next to each other. Well, like across from each other. And there's a coffee table in the middle. And I'm this charming bartender. And I walk up. And there's four women there all drinking and imbibing and talking and stuff. And I walk up. And I dropped off a drink. And on my left arm, I have Tibetan for poet on tattooed on my arm. And like one of the ladies looks at me and she goes, what does that say? I said, that says Tibetan for poet. She goes, oh yeah, we'll do a poem. So I did Leonard Cohen, Shel Silverstein, and Rumi. And like six of the seven women were totally into it. But one woman got really, really serious. And she looked me in the eye and she said, you do drugs, don't you? This one's for her. She said, you do drugs, don't you? I looked her back in the eye and I said, Tupperware. She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, where does the wind go after it's spent a long day of blowing and wants to go somewhere and unwind? She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, have you ever experienced the BV spread? She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, one night I entered the Hung Far Low and 10 minutes later I walked out of the Hungry Tiger and I have no idea how it happened. She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, are you going to eat the rest of that? She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, if you and I were to play hide and seek, I would hide inside you. Because it's the last place you would look for anything that means everything in this world. She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, are you talking to me or the 12 disciples standing behind me? She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, I'm your chance meeting, just waiting to happen. She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, I've got a great idea. Let's take the next 10 minutes and just pretend that we're human. She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, hey, 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 hey. Werewolf. She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, you're so vain. I bet you think this poem's about you, don't you? Don't you? She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, super crazy, kooky, cool, ollie, ollie consciousness. She said, you do drugs, don't you? I said, look, ma'am, I'll be right back with your check. Okay, let's try this one. This boy's compassion. The boy is through searching. Beginning in silence came a whisper. Now it's an all-out soliloquy. He follows the voice inside himself. The boy stands up from his chair, ready to leave the coffee shop, ready to walk home. He hugs his friend goodbye and steps out onto Hawthorne. Wondrously gazing around himself, his senses jump from his friend's eyes up to the sky, around it all the lights, to the buses going by, and the people with all the backpacks, and the windows in the houses, and all of the trees, and the mud, and the wind blowing by, and the streets, and all the chimes, and the birds, and the rust in the cars, and the cracks in the sidewalks, and the sky full of stars, and the blades of grass, in the living rooms, in the swaying swings, in the waves, in all the puddles. He feels his own smile so loud, bouncing out and about, and then returning to his own consciousness. The boy's at home now, writing about life, trying so hard to share with everyone how all that is exciting and beautiful. So innocently, he wishes to share. Though each time he tries, the words come out all wrong, and he follows up with apologies. And in that moment of fret, of trying, the boy laid down his pen, and he suddenly understood how his friend's eyes, and that big, beautiful sky, and all the lights, all the city lights, and the buses going by, and the people in the backpacks, and the windows in the houses, and all the trees, and the mud, and the wind blowing by, and the street corners, and all the chimes, and the birds, and the rust, and the cars, and the cracks in the sidewalk, and the sky full of stars, and the blades of grass, oh, and the living rooms, and the swaying swings, and the waves, and the puddles. They all never, ever spoke or preached one word of Zen, Bible, Buddha, Jesus, Enlightenment, Father, Son, Holy Ghost to him. They just were what they are. And he heard what they said. Thanks, friends.
Thanks, Jason. Jason is one of many fine Portland poets needing a book or two to be published. Another one is the amazing Mike G, and the show's opener, Dennis McBride. And I have now for you six poems from another recently dead poet, well, longtime Talking Earth producer and host Patrick Bocard. They're from his book Walking Home Weird, which was published in 2006 and republished just recently by his wife Melissa. A book of Patrick's more recent poems is in the planning stages. But here's some samples from Walking Home Weird. Miocene era yuppies. Their homes grazing on a plain overlooking woolly mammoth herds. Their children chip away asphalt to uncover trilobite fossils in the paved streets. Hardcore paleontologists fail to believe haphazard fossilized ferns, sacred frozen forests, resident geyser fish and mud-slinging missing links, exchange students from the Triassic age hem in the new immigrants from the present to today's past. We watch the sunset on Cretaceous before remote clicking to the Paleolithic. Another vintage season swung by today's parking pay dirt via haunted hasty yesteryear. I'll harpoon a megalithic shark for power lunch. May you encase a megachurch in ovarian suburbs for dessert. Smelling salts pulse under Neanderthal nostrils, smudge sage haze all over the house to clear out the dead dinosaur milk, smoke out the geothermal history until we can walk out the door into a parallel solar-powered world. The heat death of the universe begins at home. Omzi spots an icicle forming in our bedroom window and sends a SWAT team to survey the next ice age. Spiderwebs crack on my wrist windshields. Our cat freezes to death mid-meow. My housemates and I swim ecstatic over a minuscule heating bill. Our smiles flash freeze into place when we unplug the refrigerator and let warm air escape the freezer. Friends' voices crystallize over the phone. Quest is speechless. Living room air crackles whenever people pass through it. A glacier climbs the roof and puts out the sun at the corner of the universe. Our landlord, Lucifer, creaks open the basement door. She turns the thermostat up, but it breaks in her six-fingered grip. Mirage Metropolis. Crossing the Morrison Bridge, I cower from the winding beauty at my back. Stopping at a pedwalk, a snake curling down, I glance back like Lot's wife. Portland sheens back. In the Willamette, a sulfuric mirage ghosts up, shimmering as if through atmospheric haze. Warning lights blink, beacons to the river's depth. Each office light off, a broken tooth gap in a lover's smile. the Still River's reflection, an undersea city rivaling Atlantis or Mu, harboring the dead dreams, the failed restaurants and clubs, musicians and poets past, the city commissioners, the executives, an entire ghost economy. Only an elect few may view it. Seattle basks in its underground city. Portland, relish your mirror in the Willamette. Remember the sailor stolen through the Shanghai tunnels. The immersed metropolis collects the failed wishes, spiriting her sister, left for dead above, but changeling below, siphoned off never to die. Rise up, silent ones. Together we shall depose city council, drag the Pearl District down from its rain cloud piercing perch to crash in the Columbia mud basin. Coke spiders from the can. Crawling out within sips, surviving on syrup, setting up shop between molars, breaking enamel into silt for their silently spun webs, mandibles slicing off floss dangerous to their livelihood, catching butterflies fleeing stomach, laying eggs and gums, eating aphids for dessert. Dentists cannot kill them. Creating mists helpful for breaking bad habits like spider eggs and bubble yum. Smoking causes early erection loss. Viagra makes men bold. Oh, that last one's true. Consumers need to be fooled. Silicon spirits. Thin as a third rail, my shadow stalks 15 feet before me, a suburban Wendigo, invisible until home, ready to carve flesh into food. Electric ignition at each citizen's fingertips, starving, they need flesh, they rend flesh into gristle, snagged between mocha yellow teeth. Our choices commune under the static moon. Synapses wending through ganglia, branches in the pine towering over microchip mountain, bouncing past stars, detonating into sunsets, automobiles eye their prey. We hold a whole wild world in our hands. Ode to an old Japanese horror film. Gamera, the radioactive turtle, hurtles through outer space with two Japanese kids unhelmeted clinging to his shell as rocket fire screams out his head hole, his leg holes, and his flaming butthole. Yeah, people can breathe in outer space. Then they get to planet X or Z or S prime and fight this giant watermelon monster with both eyes on one side so he can't see all the punches coming. He fine doubles as a saw blade and ninja stars fly like snot out of his nostril. But I was so shocked when the actresses pretending to be evil alien humanoids without makeup shaved the children's heads so their brains could be sucked out through clear plastic bubble dryers. And you wonder why I refuse to walk under those innocent light posts, neon dreaming within what of what mine tastes like. The twin fairies ask where God's sweater hangs from heaven so the mighty Mothra may finally feast. Those poems were from Patrick Bocard, Portland's monster poet, among many other things, including a KBOO volunteer for a couple of decades. Not everyone has time or interest to volunteer at KBOO, but many of you could have a little spare money to help the station. This is our winter end of the year summarizing 2024 fund drive, and we need you to help the station keep providing its 24/7 wonderment. Go to kboo.fm and hit donate on the upper right. We're right at 20 Southeast 8th, just off Burnside. You can come visit us during the day and give us some donations. We'd appreciate it. But now let's go into the third and still alive and well featured poet, Jen Coleman. She is a Portlander, poet and author of two volumes, Psalms for Dogs and Sorcerers and We Denizens. She works as a writer for Environmental Defense Fund and plays harmonica and ukulele in the Stumptown Jug Thumpers, who you can find around town now and again. But right now, here's Jen Coleman.
after the forest fire. O plants, you who grow in the sun and smoke and broken promises of autumn rain, O plants, you who are host to bugs and bees and spread seed with abandon, O plants, you who are vigorous and chlorophyllic, by which I mean green, and O plants, tell me in words what you know from your seasons and centuries. Tell me in words what you know from the earth's trembling, and the worms trembling, and the wind that makes you tremble. O plants, tell me what you see without eyes. O plants, with your bodies so different from mine, your vasculature so complex, your roots such an irresistible metaphor for human desire. Tell me what you know for love of earth. Oh, for the sake of it. Shh, 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 quiet, 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 quiet. Shh, shh, shh. Weird. So weird. This is not a metaphor. Crows and worms and dirt and myth and a thin layer of leaves on the concrete, stems in the air, are waiting for an animal to pass, to live until it collapses, its body a mound in a field of leaves with stems all pointing to the sky. Floods come after fire, rock and landslides, and then little green wildflowers and mushrooms, and feasting fish and elk and deer, and cottonwoods and willows, and the bugs and bees and butterflies will find bountiful homes in the burnt snags, and bluebirds will nest, and woodpeckers will feast on the bugs. The burnt forest will give itself to life. And the obscure salamanders will interpret through their cryptic skin. Salamanders that move so slow in a world run by little things and leaf litter in fishless, ephemeral water bodies. And salamanders and wolves are connected by cattails, and crows and worms and dirt and myth and dirt and worms and crows are what we know. In this dream you will ride a familiar platypus. In this dream you will ride a familiar platypus, the most unusual of unlikely animals, alone. Alone, only you will swim upstream from rock to rock and play in a burrow, and in a burrow be burrowed with your platypus familiar, beak in the air, head swaying, electro-locating all the while in this dream. You make me laugh to electrolocate me like a platypus. You can feel the electricity from my muscles on the inside. And if I am laughing in the dream, I am laughing for you to feel it from the inside. In this dream, you rock me in your arms, me on my pangolin, my riding pangolin. Your platypus and my pangolin familiar in the mud again. And you swim, and I play in the mud on the riverbank, on the river, alone. Alone. Only me and my pangolin collect pine cone pangolin babies among the artichokes blossoming like baby pangolin. Bust open, blossoming with bees, and a soft periwinkle heart, and I can feel you from the inside. I can feel you on the inside, too. You shrug your shoulders like a pangolin, and you wait and wait like a pangolin. You say yes, and then sleep, sleep, sleep in your skin. And I drink you in. We must move away from the subjugation of people. We stupid humans, struck senseless and abashed at our undoing, stunned by wonder, by surprise, stunned as stupid humans can be by our cruelty. Oh, we are so stupid, amazed and confounded by apples. We stupid humans, with our words, aghast at our own destruction, dull and dismayed and standing together stupid and naked under our clothes. Our stupid will outlast our stupor, will outlast us, becoming what we will become with a dark voice that carries on and on and on to freedom. I want to see this moment from a distance. I want to believe in being distant from now and all the other ways that we can feel one another as burlap and silky and profound. What is most precious to you, so precious that you will hold it cupped in your hands in a stupor? It's a very serious consideration for people who have no identity outside the current present. What if your precious ego was not a ripe peach, a baby bird, a butterfly, as it is when you were little, when you were an infant, just learning deceit, practicing the will of your body among bodies? A brash and beautiful baby boy practices wrapping his mouth around first words. Happy, happy, happy. Astonished at how words can move people. Happy, happy, he tries it out. Happy, happy, bounding around the room, tethered from his crown with an invisible silk to the moon and stars. Happy, 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 the curl-headed baby is a feeling animal that thinks. His words will tether his feet to the earth. There is no turning back from language. What gives stupid humans the stupor to listen? What does it take to be suspended in stupor with hearts and hearts and hearts open? What the body, what the mouth, what the ears it takes for these stupid humans, stunned, amazed, confounded, to be united in stupid? In what do you find such awe that you would put your body forward to feel it come to you? That you would be struck senseless? That you would beckon it and dare not touch it with your hands, your mouth, your eyes? What would you find so awesome that you would not desire to possess it, but to be near it, to be cheek to cheek, or to be part of it? For as long as I can remember, I have been devout in the belief that I don't know. Oh, stupid human, what laughs in light is what lasts last. Or what light laughs is what lasts last. We must lay down on our backs and ask the first person who comes along to accept us. Oh, stupid human, hold your cheek next to my stupid cheek. Feel how warm you are next to me, and be abased, and be in wonder, and hold that dear, and feel the force that leaves us as we detach from stupid and words and get tangled up in what is beyond the subjugation of people. Villanelle on the End of the World. There's no turning back from language, I find, when the last light dims and I lie awake with you and the end of the world in mind. With sight and taste, I can turn back time to know where meaning from sense I make. But there's no turning back from language, I find. All in all, tethering what I think to words is fine. But I wouldn't want to make that mistake with you, and with the end of the world in mind. In the mirrors that make up the sky, I see reflected what some call heartbreak. And And there's no turning back from language, I find. The planet will not cease, as hard as people try. But as to human hearts, I can't name what's at stake with you. With the end of the world in mind. I can look into your eyes, as blue as time. And though I might think on it, no words will I take. There's no turning back from language, I find. With you and the end of the world in mind. Some people look to the stars for light. Some only see when it's sunny. I look down below the waves to see the angels swim. I love the octopodes. I like to sing like a whale. But the secret of life is deep in the mesopelagic zone. Who is the glow in the cold twilight? Who is the courier of death into life? Who pumps the blood of the earth through its gills? It's the krill, krill, krill. It's the vertical migration of the krill. Oh, I love the mesopelagic zone. And not just because it's weird. But lanternfish are the coolest nightmare I'll never see. I love the mesopelagic zone, where you gotta have light from within. Ophlophorid shrimp and tube shoulder fishes are so startling. Deep where the sea is swarming with life, they rise up to the ocean surface at night. Bristle mouths and hatchet fish, squid and the like, feed and then retreat to the depths when it's light. Like an underworld fairy to the deep sea bed, they leave the souls behind and carry stuff that is dead to the depths of the ocean like a carbon pump. And there it's gonna stay for millennium. What the carbon gonna be someday's unknown, unknown. But it's not warming the climate, all thanks to the mesopelagic zone. Collaboration. I wanna have it with krill. Will we all perish if we cling to hegemony? I will look for answers in the mesopelagic. I love the coral reefs, the warm ones and the cold ones too. But my heart belongs to the krill of the mesopelagic zone. Yeah, I love the mesopelagic zone, 'cause I love life on Earth. Thank you, krill, for doing what you're doing. Thank you, krill, for killing it by krilling it. Thank you, krill, for doing what you do to make the world go round.
Thanks, Jen. The song that ended that set with Jen on vocals featured Robert Birak on guitar, and you can find more of Robert's music on Spotify at Def Raw B. Let me throw in another poem from the guy we started this with, Dennis McBride, from his book Killing the Mockingbird, How to Make Love to a Woman. First, you must alchemize desire into love by changing molten lead into gold. This will take a little practice, some lying and a sleight of hand. Remember, she knows the lips of her closed doors hide the generous delights you cannot resist, that you need to return to open, to come into again and again till you come apart. Let her know it is her face that draws you. It is the face her face makes when you cup with your hand the round mound that parts her far below her face. If her intelligence is important to you, you will have to seduce her intellect's heart. If not, your responsibility will increase to ensure solely her heart's desire. If she is a poet, she will be taking notes. If she is not a poet, your peril will increase. She will be entirely there. This is not a class you can audit. She is not a substitute teacher. You are going to be graded. Do not quote from the Bible or have one of you on your bedstand, and do not mention free introductory offer. Reinforce her naive belief that it's easy to have a penis, that its prime virtue is patience, that it's not a fire engine going to a fire. Expose your juggler before your penis, and let her be on top to show submission. When you enter her, do not tremble. She knows your fear, but does not want to see it right now, or have you quote the poems of Rumi or Mary Oliver. Do not begin till desire's thick truth is stronger than fear or shame, its intention firm. Yeah, besides Dennis and Patrick, another fine Portland poet who died this, well, in the last couple months, was Harold Johnson. I'll be reading some of his poems next month, which is next year, and because this year we'll be gone in a couple weeks. For a lot of us, it's ending in worry and fear. Don't surrender or even gloom up prematurely. Trump is a serial failure. He's a lot more bluster than action, loses focus quickly, etc. Cares about nothing but himself, you know, so don't worry, but do work on your own positivity and communications with your neighbors, co-workers, people in places you shop and visit. It's us, the people. Thanks to all of you listening, especially those who've contributed to KBOO, debt cash-wise, volunteer-wise. Thanks to my three featured poets, Laura Feldman, Jason Kastrup, and Jen Coleman. Thanks to Talking Earth founders Barbara Lamorticella and Walt Curtis. To Talking Earth producer and host Patrick Bocard. I'm Dan Raphael, and here's something I wrote. Invocation. May we be invisible, living below the radar, between the cracks, outside the spectrum, beyond suspicion, camouflaged by blandness, awareness, and smooth movement, not worth fearing or knowing. May we be immune to the lies of mirrors, windows, holograms, eyes other than the ones in our hearts. May we not be in the wrong place at the precise time for a bullet, crazy violence, an uncontrolled vehicle, something hard enough falling from the sky. May we stay away from the military, the penal system, the medical system, the welfare system. If we must go into any, may we come out with only temporary damage and not too heavily in debt. May we be subtle and generous in our actions. May we stay happy, fed, curious, sheltered in some ways and wide open in others. May we embrace the benefits we are given and see difficulties as winds, and experienced and attentive sailor can find the angle through. May we not die too soon or live too long. And it's time for another poem. I mean, always these unexpected opportunities. That's what 2025 will offer us. That's what tomorrow's offering. Bodhi City Bodhisattva. I won't leave till everyone is living in the appropriate place. House, body, nestled in earth, spring tree skies, bird constellations, link and swoop, decorating rooftops with animated calligraphy, waiting for the ink to separate into letters, waiting for instructions to sprout across my screen. If everyone went to bed when I did, the Earth's orbit would be threatened. The way tomatoes change a soup's color, the way skin facilitates music, like taking 5 minutes to rub one palm across the other and spending hours decompressing what I heard, graphing how the volume peaks and wanes, like what the fuck transversing the sky, changing echoes and overtones. As learning a new song each day soon requires changes in wardrobes, paycheck, and friends, we're no longer longer the same modality, so few settle. And now that music's no longer local, every past is available today. Every style's contemporary. Songs so new you start dancing before you hear them. When the whole city's dancing, I will rest. But for now, we'll end this show. This is Dan Raphael. Love you. Bye.
Tuned in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch and snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style.